begin to allow your eyes to close and again to just return to your breath. And maybe just as you're breathing, as you breathe in to relax the body, and you breathe out to relax the mind. And as you relax the body, maybe drawing awareness to the experience of sitting, being supported by the chair, being held by gravity, and just allowing your back to be upright and relaxed. This can be thought of as taking your seat. Taking your seat in the community of love, the community of life. Certainly taking your seat in this present moment. Maybe coming back to the awareness that you belong here, you are welcome here. Exactly as you are, wherever you are, however you are, you belong. And then allowing your awareness to just gently move to your heart. Exhale. Can you allow your heart to open, maybe to soften? It was Rumi who said that our task is not to search for love, but to be aware of the barriers we put around our heart to love. Can you meet this present moment with an unprotected and undefended heart? And just notice how that is. Maybe noticing whatever's present for you here today, a worry, a care, a sorrow, a joy. Whatever it is, can it be met with love and compassion, just as it is? There's nothing to fix. There's nothing to change. Maybe even nothing to understand. Can it just be met with love? And then allowing your awareness to come back out of your body toward the sounds, maybe the smells, maybe the awareness of the other beautiful beings that are here in this beautiful place surrounded by mountains and trees and animals. And then as you're ready, taking another deep breath or two and opening your eyes.
Sent me.
Thank you. I just love that thought. You know, we can say that heaven is just not a place to go to when we die, but also a place to awaken, from which to awaken and live from. I like that. All right. Interesting. I was just going to ask, I'm curious, how is it for me to talk to you with these on? I didn't get the, I wasn't expecting the cool response. I'm just curious, what's your initial reaction? Don't think about it, or this isn't a test, but you know, what's the reaction? I'm getting applause. Oh, so maybe I should keep them on. I wasn't planning on it, but what's that? Blinded by the light. Yeah, there's a song about that. Yeah. If I were just to engage with you in conversation, what would be your experience of me talking to you with these? I'm getting some. Okay, what's the shake? What are the shaky heads all about? Why? What? To California. Didn't see that one coming, Maribel. Depends on the. Okay, so distance, right? Yeah, I mean, the farther away, not so big of an idea, but yeah, one-on-one, hard to see the eyes. Yeah, what else?
Are they dilated?
Of course, Bob would ask if they're dilated. Sure, of course, yeah, right. Anything else? Yeah, what else? How does it make you feel? Yeah, Jim, what? It's what? A dossier for a preacher. Going outside the box. Oh, okay. That's dossier. I learned a new word today. Yeah. Anybody else?
Hiding.
Hiding. Hiding. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Almost the Blues Brothers. Yeah. Oh, I needed the hat. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to tell you a story about these glasses. True story. A couple weeks ago, I'm an early riser, so I'm usually up before the sun comes up, between 4:30 and 5 in the morning. I inherited it from my mom, who inherited it from her mom. It just kind of runs in the family. And so, and I like it. You know, the flip side of that, after about 8 o'clock at night, I'm not worth much. You know, it's a nice fast start in the morning and then just a slow glide to the evening. So I'm not a night person. But I have a little routine when I get up and I make my coffee and, you know, then I have a couple hours to meditate and journal, and that's when I do most of my message prep, is early in the morning. And so a couple weeks ago, I just got up, you know, I did my whole routine. Of course, as I'm there, the sun is coming up. This particular day, I was outside on a little back patio area in the garden, and it was just wonderful, and I just had a great time. Imagine my shock when I went into the bathroom and noticed I was wearing these instead of my regular glasses. Here's the deal. I had no idea I was wearing these. I didn't. And it just got me thinking, for how many of us, or how many times, at least in my life, do I go through life unconsciously wearing sunglasses? Now, would we agree that sunglasses are helpful, especially in the summer? How do sunglasses help us?
Yeah.
Protect our eyes? Yeah. Yeah, from
even in the winter too.
And in the winter they do. Yeah. Yeah, how do they protect? What do they do?
UV.
Reduce the glare, block out UV. Yeah.
Filter.
Yeah, there's a word that some of the sunglasses have that start with a P. Does anybody know what it is? They protect, they what?
Polarize.
They polarize. Yeah, does anybody know how polarizing works in sunglasses? Not exactly, but that's part of the effect, yes, yes. They what? They block out the harmful rays and let in the ones that are okay. What else, Jim? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they bend the light by taking the eye. The way I've heard it explained is when you look at white light or bright light, it breaks down the light into different colors and different streams and make it helpful. So we can agree that sunglasses are helpful, right? Yeah. But then I got thinking, were we born with these things? Yeah, we humans are interesting creatures, aren't we? You know, the things we do to protect ourselves and do things. And again, this is not a don't wear your sunglasses. I wear these all the time when driving and whatever, and I think it's very, very helpful. But I think it's also helpful and can be helpful for us as we think about this thing called life and the experience of life, and particularly our desire to be people who live, love, and uplift lives. If we think of light, if we think of love in terms of light, and maybe those moments when looking at the light of love is just too much, what happens? We reach for those sunglasses. We want to block out all those harmful shades. And isn't it nice when we can polarize too? Yeah, I know, the nervous laughs. Where's he going with this? I'm not going where you think I am. But I think we would all agree that, you know, we are living in polarized times, right? You know, and I think part of the reason that that happens is, again, the way our minds work is they want to create order out of chaos. So if we can put things, if we can put people, if we can put voices, if we can put perspectives, if we can put stories and values into these little boxes, it creates this, I'm going to use the word intentionally, illusion of safety and chaos, safety and security in a world that otherwise we might experience chaotically and unpredictable. And so again, the invitation and the offering here is not to pathologize any of that, or to make any viewpoint, or to make any perspective, or to make any reaction that you have with that right or wrong. But the invitation is just to notice when you're doing that. I think that's the difference between those of us who are conscious, awake, and aware, and those of us who are less conscious, less awake, and less aware. And again, it's not to pathologize or make any of that right or wrong, but to simply, my hope is to bring a model or a framework of just what it's like to live life in this world today. And so, you know, the title of the message is Living in Harmony, so I want to kind of break the metaphor of light now and switch over into music. Leanne, can I come to the piano for just a minute? You can stay right there, see if I can do this. All right. So one of the things we talk about at Unity is that we believe that there's value and worth in all voices, all faiths, all traditions, all spiritualities, everything. That there's a value and worth in that. We can think of that as like notes on a piano, like this. Like, how do you like that? Oh, you had to do no. I just love that. And I don't know. Thank you for doing that. There was a composer, I don't know if it was Mozart or Beethoven or Bach or somebody, whose parents used to go down in the middle of the night and do what I just did. Play an incomplete major scale and just end it on the leading tone like that. And it would drive him nuts. He'd have to come down and play that last note. So I love that you did that, Leanne. Thank you. All right. I don't want to invade your space here too much. But now, so like, how about this note? You like that? Yeah. How about this one? Like that? Yeah. Oh, where's he going with this? Yeah. Da-da! Right. Good. Now, when some notes are played together, they create a harmony, right? Like this. How does that sound? Yeah. Good, right. That's a C major chord.
Yeah.
So again, when we look at the world, when we look at people, you know, and when we can affirm and assume the goodness and the love and the value in everyone, we can hear that in harmony. How about this? How about this harmony? How do you like that? Oh, Donna's. Ooh, I don't like that.
I love it.
But Leanne loves it. Look at how interesting. Isn't this interesting, Donna? What don't you like about it, Tanya? I'm sorry, Tanya. I can't. I took my sunglasses off too, so I can't even blame that. What is it?
It's a discord.
How does it make you feel?
I don't know. Not in harmony. It makes me want to go.
It's Sure, icky, yucky, not pleasant. Yeah. Can we agree that there are voices, that there are perspectives, there are people, there are other things in our life that make us feel that way?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet, this is music, and this minor chord that I just played is very, very popular in music that we listen to today. And oftentimes, it's intended to evoke that very emotional response of being a little darker, somber, sad. Yeah. Okay, how about this note? And this note.
Huh?
All right. How about this interval?
Okay.
How does that interval make you feel? Huh? It's a tritone. Oh yes, the other music majors are in the crowd. What is it? Yes, it is. Did you know? This is the truth. For years in the church, and sometimes, I mean, I love churches. I'm a minister. I wouldn't be here if I wouldn't, but sometimes churches can be the toughest place. That interval that I just played was not allowed in music. No. Why do you, well, okay, you tell me. Why do you think it wasn't?
Because my reaction was the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was called, no, seriously, and I'm talking about the era in like the 6th, 7th, 8th century, and any of you familiar with Gregorian chant? Okay, Western music really had a lot of its influence in the church, and so for those early centuries as Western music was coming along, Gregorian chant, they would not allow that chord to be used, because it was called the devil's chord, because of how discordant it was. Now, of course it does. Absolutely. Absolutely. So fast forward. Yeah. Now, so what's interesting is as music evolved in the church to, you know, the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries, as it, you know, moved from Gregorian chant to classical music into romantic and the modern era, that chord was used all the time. And it shows up in jazz all the time, right, Jim? You know, those of you that are familiar with jazz, I mean, different colors, different things, and all that kind of stuff. And again, it's not that it changes the quality of the musical harmony or the tone, but our capacity to live with it becomes more conscious, okay? Just to, one more little side story here. It carried forward into the church today for years. I think you knew that I was for 28 years a pastor in some conservative, fundamental, evangelical churches. And I was the music director. I did what Julie did here for years. Yeah. And our church had contemporary music like we do here, drums, guitars, you know, popular, all that kind of stuff. And there was a, I'll just use their name. I don't know if he's still alive anymore. A gentleman named Bill Gothard, who had a ministry called, did you know Bill? Some of you know Bill? Okay, you know, all right. Basic Youth Conflicts, and it was all about how to be married and how to raise your kids. Except there was one thing about Mr. Gothard. He was never married, and he never had kids. But this is what I find fascinating. He can teach whatever you want, but I was surprised by the number of people who followed him religiously. And included in that was having pure music. So he would say that to do drums and rock and roll, it was the African beat that had satanic, sadistic roots and had no place in the church. The only thing that he said could be in the church was melodious harmonic music, which oddly contained much of that devil's chord that I just told you about. So I would get these people that would come up to me and say, James back in the, you know, I think we shouldn't have those drums. It's not good for our kids to hear this kind of stuff and to expose them to this kind of dissonance, you know. And I would just sit there and, you know, remind them that, you know, for years, music and all that has evolved. All right, so we can hear all these stories and go, oh my gosh, we're so crazy. But here's my invitation to you. As you look across your life today, are there those voices? Are there those perspectives? Are there those harmonies that hit you sort of like, ugh, I don't like that? And then can you notice how your mind spins stories and makes meaning of those experiences? It's what the mind does. And it's a beautiful thing. Again, it's not a wrong thing. It's a beautiful thing. Because I think oftentimes what happens is we meet something that triggers us. Like devil's cord, trigger, okay? And if we're not conscious and we're not aware, we either project that trigger onto someone or something else as bad, evil, and wrong, or we turn that inside and we think, well, there must be something wrong with me. And we get lost in a shame spiral, a guilt spiral, you know, or whatever. And my friends, this is the human experience. And what I want to cultivate here, what gets me out of bed in the morning here, about being here in North Idaho, here in this incredible, I just my fourth grandchild was born last week, so I was back in Seattle, and you know, just people asked me how I love life, and I said, I just meet some amazing human beings here in this place. And I just want to see us as a community develop a love, a compassion, a resilience, a fierceness that can hold everything in real unity, welcome everything and receive everything, even those things that are like, ick, 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 ick. Why? Somebody said it earlier. When we do that, we actually grow our capacity to love and see the value and worth in everything. But it's hard. I'm not here telling you that I'm an expert. I mean, you've heard me talk about things that, you know, I meet these beautiful souls, and then I see things or I hear things, I'm like, whoa, you know, that do that. And I've been very open about that with you, and you've been very loving and very tolerant and very gracious with me. But let me just share some thoughts with you and try to see if we can bring this all together. Let's remind ourselves of this. Love is an intelligence that seeks expression. Ernest Holmes said that. So love, God, Spirit, I think of as love that is always seeking to express itself, always, always. Sometimes that expression of love is harmonious, like that major chord that sounds good. Sometimes it's really, really dissonant. And sometimes, again, if we're not mindful, we can be looking at this light of love expression through sunglasses, polarizing sunglasses that can feel really comfortable and making sense out of the chaos, but we would also agree it's not real. Or it's a veiled reality, okay? And here's something else that happens. What we look for, we will find. When I was back in Seattle last week visiting my granddaughter, my son is joining the Eastern Orthodox Church. So he left the church that I was a part of and is now becoming Eastern Orthodox. The circles that he swims in are considered alt-right. They make the conservatism that's here pretty liberal and soft. I just got to tell you. But one of the people from their church was, I was telling him I was in Coeur d'Alene. Oh, I love Coeur d'Alene. Oh, it's great. Yeah, I just came over there. And I said, yeah, what do you love about it? He said, oh, it's beautiful. It's natural. But then when I got here, all I saw were Black Lives Matter and gay pride flags. And I almost went, spit my coffee out, you know, because... what I find here is, you know, make America great, don't tread on me, and all this kind of stuff. But here's the point, okay? Who's right and who's wrong?
Neither.
I'm just as capable of looking for what I'm looking for, which will be a threat or what I see as a threat. And so my eyes are going to scan and look for that. Somebody else, another human being next to me, will do the same thing. Does that make either one of us right or wrong? Absolutely not. What it does is makes us human. And I think we are never more divine, we are never more sacred than when we are human. Welcome all of it. All right? Two words I came across of paranoia. Okay, this is just for your own reflection. Paranoia is the sense that others are out to do us harm. Now, is paranoia a human experience? Yeah. Are our neighbors over in Spokane paranoid about the harm of fire? Uh-huh. Yeah. Paranoid about, you know, danger for our lives? Yeah. So to be paranoid, you know, is to be human. But I came across this word here, pronoia. The sense that a force or divine presence is conspiring to help us. Isn't that good? So as you think of those people or those things that trigger you, that call to mind hurts or things that you do. See, here's the difference. The mind will do the same thing, okay? But the mind, the inner part of our mind, the limbic brain, the reptilian brain, the part that is beyond speech but is the deepest part of our instinct to keep us alive, has not evolved to distinguish between a real threat or an actual threat. And so when that tritone harmony comes into our life, the mind is going to spin a story about it, that it's out to get us. We can think about that in terms of conspiracy theories, okay? And we all have them, regardless of what you do. Again, because we see something that's dissonant or hard, the mind wants to make meaning to it. And probably the one way that it makes meaning to it is ascribes a certain theory or understanding to that. It's just how the mind works. And so this is really, you know, to you, as you look at the world, do you see the universe? Do you see creation? Do you see the life as out to get you? Do you see other people who come here as out to get you? Or do you see them maybe as ones who are prompting us to another level of evolution, to another level of growth, to another sense of experience? Yeah. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy. But it does mean it can grow us and help us out. What if, think about, you know, again, what you look for, you will find. What if you are not broken? Yeah, what would shift for you in your life, in your relationship with yourself, if you didn't see yourself as someone broken and needing help, but fully, completely, perfectly whole? And all you're doing is unfolding. All you're doing is evolving, okay? What if others are not broken? What if the person sitting next to you or behind you or around you are not broken? What if the people in this neighborhood are not broken? What if the people in this community, in this state, are not broken? What if our country, what if our world isn't broken? Yeah. What if the world and the universe are not broken? You see, again, our natural mind wants to fix, wants to repair. What would shift, again, what would shift in your life if that wasn't the case? And instead of trying to fix something, it was more about exploring and discovering. So on a scale of 1 to 10, what does this look like? What is your awe and wonder quotient? We talked about how, Tanya, like the you know, that major chord makes me feel happy, you know? And who doesn't like to feel happy? Give myself some happiness, right? You know, yeah, I'm a happiness, yeah. Like, yeah, music on Friday night, we went everywhere from Hank Williams Jr. to Bruno Mars. I mean, it was just, you know, it was just crazy, you know? But yeah, get up and dance and all this kind of stuff. But I think sometimes in these communities, you know, where we talk about everything is love, you know, rainbows and butterflies and all that kind of stuff, we want to watch that we don't bypass or we don't deny the other element of our existence as well. And so when I think of love, joy and happiness are a part of it, but how about awe and wonder? As you look out around you and just to go throughout the day today on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your awe and wonder quotient? Do you ever see things that just render you speechless? There's something, childbirth, yep. There's something about the sun setting when it's smoky, the colors, there's just an eeriness to it and a stillness to it. It's like, wow. Now again, if it's broken and fixing, and we say, oh, those darn fires, you know, and this, that, and yeah, it's polluting my lungs, I'm gonna die early, and all that kind of stuff. Okay. Can you just behold it, you know? All right. Let's see, what's next here? So I love this quote by Richard Rohr. So we don't come to God by doing it right. We come to him by doing it wrong. So when you experience those moments where, yeah, I blew it, I learned, or whatever, just notice that it's not doing it right. We find God in the experience of doing things wrong. So I want to leave you with three practical things that can help you live in better harmony, okay? And the first one is this: discern between the love of power and the power of love. In your interactions with others, in your actions with organizations, in your interactions with whatever, just watch for in your life, is this more about the love of power and the sense of needing to be in control, the sense of needing to manage, the sense of needing to manipulate, you know, or the power of love, the power of love to soften, to open, to receive connection in ways maybe never understood or experienced. Secondly, value connection over being correct. Again, what would shift in your life, in your interactions, especially with those people or those perspectives that trigger you, if you valued connection over being correct? This last Friday, I had a chance to attend a group called Braver Angels. Any of you familiar with Braver Angels? Yeah, they met down at St. Luke's Church. And this is a group that is seeking to humanize the polarization that's in our country. And there's a book that's out. I may not be getting the title right, but when you're engaging in a conversation with someone that maybe you disagree with, can you ever come to the point where you say, oh, I never thought of it that way? I never thought of that way. A few weeks ago, I told you the story of seeing the woman getting in Coeur d'Alene, where there's that statue of the woman, you know, commemorating women's suffrage, and a young woman standing next to it with her thumb down and a scowl on her face. That was one of those, holy mother of whatever did I just see here? But it's interesting, in unpacking that with my son and some of his super conservative friends, they asked me, James, is voting a right or a privilege? I never thought of that. And I thought to myself, could it be both? All right. But the idea was, in that moment, I heard something that I had never thought of before. And I'm grateful that there's a place there where I have an opportunity to have my heart and my mind and my prejudices stretched and expanded. It happens when we value connection over being correct. Lastly, differentiate between impact and intent. And I see this happen all the time, all the time. You said this, you did this, and it made me feel da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. What does the other person say immediately? Oh, well, that's not how I meant it. And I just want to say, stop, 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 stop. Can you validate the experience of whatever it was that you said and did that person is happening and not say anything else? Folks, I can tell you, this one skill here, I think, could revolutionize how we relate to each other. But it's hard, because I don't think any of us wake up in the morning intending to hurt somebody or intending to trigger somebody. And yet we all do, right? Developing the capacity to live with the tension, to live with the discomfort, to live with that tritone dissonance of knowing that maybe I did something or I said something that was hurtful or harmful. Thank you. Yeah. All right. Is going to develop our capacity to live in what I want to call real unity. Real unity. Okay? I think I'll close with this here. Remember, let's always remember this. We're not here to save the world, but to belong more fully to it. I really think this is what we are as a species waking up to, and especially white Europeans who kind of have brought just a natural colonization, domination, take, you know, extract from the land. We are opening up to this idea of what does it mean to belong to it? What does it mean to belong to everyone? What does it mean to belong to the trees, to the land, to the forest, to the water? I've shared with you how many times this land has gifted me a sense of deep, grounded peace. And this may sound strange, but a few days ago, just in meditation, I was just laying flat on the ground and drinking in the clean, masculine energy of this land. I'm not saying this to make myself into some saint, because I have a lot of stuff that I'm still, you know, living with in my life, but there is something special about the energy of this land here. When we can just shift our consciousness from trying to save it and do something to it, but just open and receive and belong more fully to it. Powerful, powerful things can happen. So, amen. Thank you for listening.